3. Krishna has described worship, food, sacrifice, penances, and charity in the three modes of nature. So now he is describing how the names of the Lord should be remembered in all of these various activities that one performs, so that anything which is lacking and any defects or discrepancies will be purified or removed. Text 23. Om Tatsat iti nirdesho brahmanas trividha smritaha brahmanas tena vedascha yagyascha vita pura. From the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the Supreme Absolute Truth. These three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during sacrifices for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Prabhupada comments. It has been explained that penance, sacrifice, charity, and foods are divided into three categories, the modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But whether first class, second class, or third, they are all conditioned, contaminated by the material modes of nature. When they are aimed at the Supreme, Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Eternal, they become means for spiritual elevation. In the scriptural injunctions, such an objective is indicated. The three words Om Tat Sat particularly indicate the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedic hymns, the word Om is always found. So, Prabhupada used to sign his letters Om Tat Sat, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. And Om is not an impersonal representation of the Supreme. It actually represents Radha and Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead and His Eternal Consort. And these Omkar is the transcendental seed of all Vedic sound, and all Vedic sound emanates from the Omkar. That is also heard by the Supersoul within the heart, even though he has no material ears. And this, the Brahmanas, while performing sacrifices, would chant these three names of God for the satisfaction of the Supreme. So when one chants, when one performs sacrifice, charity, or penance, one must understand that according to one's faith, according to one's swabhava, those activities will be conditioned by the three modes of material nature. And so in order to purify whatever modes of nature may be present, in order to purify or remove any discrepancies or defects that may also be occurred in the sacrifice or charity or penance, and one should chant Om Tat Sat, and one should perform the activity in order to please the Supreme. This, if one performs the activity to please the Supreme, it's purifying, and more purifying is when one chants the names of God. Prabhupada continues, one who acts without following the regulations of the scriptures will not attain the absolute truth. He will get some temporary result, but not the ultimate end of life. Conclusion is that the performance of sacrifice, charity, sacrifice and penance must be done in the mode of goodness. Performed in the mode of passion or ignorance, they are certainly inferior in quality. So, the Vedic scenario is such that the activities are performed for gradual improvement from the lower rungs of the banyan tree, you know, gradually from ignorance to passion and to goodness. So the Vedic scenario is like that. It's a kind of indirect or gradual process to purify one, to come to the mode of goodness. But Krishna is not indicating that here. He's indicating the more direct process of performing these activities directly for the Supreme with the chanting of the holy names added. The three words Om Tat Sat are uttered in conjunction with the holy name of the Supreme Lord, for example, Om Tat Vishnu. Whenever a Vedikim, or the holy name of the Lord, is uttered, Om is added. This is the indication of Vedic literature. These three words are taken from Vedic hymns. Om Ityetat Brahmano Nideshtam Nama. Rig Veda indicates the first goal. Then, Tattvam Asi, Chandogya Upanishad, indicates the second goal. And Sat Eva Somya, Chandogya Upanishad, indicates the third goal. Combined, they become Om Tat Sat. So, these different indications are somewhat subtle, because Om Tat Sat are, they're all names for God. But we'll see there's some slight different connotations here described. We'll maybe come back to this statement. Combined, they become Om Tat Sat. Formerly, when Brahma, the first created living entity, performed sacrifices, he indicated by these three words the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the same principle has always been followed by the Siddha succession. So this hymn has great significance. Bhagavad Gita recommends, therefore, that any work done should be done for Om Tat Sat, or for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one performs penance, charity, and sacrifice with these three words, he is acting in Krishna consciousness. So the Shruti said that negligence while performing the sacrifices can be overcome by remembering the names of Vishnu. And now he describes these three in more detail. One, text 24. Tasmad omityudharitya jagyadana tapakriyaha pavartante dadanukta satatam brahmavarinam. Therefore, transcendentalists undertaking performances of sacrifice, charity, and penance in accordance with scriptural regulations begin always with Om to attain the Supreme. So Om particularly is a very near and dear name of Lord Vishnu. Although all of them are names of Lord Vishnu, Om particularly is famous for being the name of Vishnu. When one chants Om, it indicates he desires to attain the Supreme. And as I said, that sound vibration, it enters the heart, and the super soul hears this sound vibration. Then the super soul reciprocates with the living entity and arranges for his further development somehow, maybe sending guru or sadhus. So here Krishna says that jagyadana tapakriya, those performances or these different activities are accompanied by the chanting of Om. They always satatam by the different brahmavadis, brahmavadina. So those who want to attain the Supreme, they chant Om, as in Om Tad Vishnu. Text 25. Tat idyad yavid sandhaya phalam yagya tapakriyaha dana kriya savivedha kriyante mokshakam shivihi. Without desiring fruitive results, one should perform various kinds of sacrifice, penance, and charity with the word tat. The purpose of such transcendental activities is to get free from material entanglement. So, Tat is also the name of the Supreme. Tat means that, or that absolute truth, that Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the word Tat particularly indicates one who is moksha kankshibi, those who desire to attain liberation and become free from material entanglement, they chant Tat. This is the specific connotation. The one who wants to get free from material entanglement, one who is moksha kankshibi, and he chants Tat. Next two verses.
Sadbhave sadubhave cha satye tat prayujate prashaste karmani tata satshabda kartayujate jagye topasi dane cha stita saditi chaushate karma chaiva tat artyam saretyeva bhagiyate.
The absolute truth is the objective of devotional sacrifice and is indicated by the word sat. The performer of such sacrifice is also called sat, as are all works of sacrifice, penance, and charity, which true to the absolute nature are performed to please the Supreme Person of Sanapritta. So here we have three different meanings or connotations here. One is that Sat is also a name of the Lord as the cause of the material Sat is also a name of the Supreme Lord as the cause of this material world, as opposed to Asat. He's different from the material world, which is Asat. Sat means, we know it means eternity, like Satchit Ananda. And then when you add Tva, it's like Ness. It means existence. Sattva. So, Sattva, it means eternal existence. It also means good activities or religious activities. And here, Sat Bhave means the nature of the Supreme. It's eternal. And Sadhu Bhave means, in the sense, the nature of the devotee. Because the devotees are also called Sat. Because they perform activities to please the Supreme, and which are religious activities, which are good activities, which are eternal activities. So they're called Sat. And the activities themselves are called sat. So you have three things. That the Lord is eternal, he is called sat. Those who worship the Lord are called sat, and the activities themselves. So this is the meaning of these words here. Prashaste karmani tata, also the activities. And this was described by Krishna in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 24. Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavya, Brahmagnam, Brahmanahutam, Brahmayavatinagantavyam, Brahmakarma Samanina. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So all three are sat. One who is steadfast in his activities is also called sat. And it says, karma chaiva tad artiyam. those activities which are performed for the pleasure of tat are called sat. So the word sat is a name for the Supreme Absolute Truth which exists in all good activities, whether they're Bhagavad Dharma or Varnashram Dharma. They're all called sat activities. As Krishna mentioned also in chapter 3, text 15, tasmat sarvakatam brahmam nitya jagya pratishtitam, that in all of these Vedic prescribed duties is found Brahman. Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is found within these activities. So therefore, the activities themselves are called sat. Prabhupada concludes in the last sentence, the supreme words Om Tat Sat are thus used in many ways to perfect all activities and make everything complete. So, after hearing about Sat Karma, one might question, what about Asat Karma? What are those activities which are impermanent? Are not eternal, not good. So Krishna answers this in the next verse. And this is the last verse of this chapter. Ashradhaya hutam dattam tapastattam kritam jayat asav ityuchate paratana chatat pretyano iha. Anything done as sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme, Vasanakrita, is impermanent. It is called asa, and is useless both in this life and in the next. So any work done, jagya, dana, or tapa, without faith in the Supreme, is the same as not doing it at all. And so Prabhupada says these are just useless activities. Anything done without the transcendental objective. Therefore, in this verse, it is declared that such activities are abominable. Everything should be done for the Supreme in Krishna consciousness. Without such faith, and without the proper guidance, there can never be any fruit. In all the Vedic scriptures, faith in the Supreme is advised. In the pursuit of all Vedic instruction, the ultimate goal is the understanding of Krishna. No one can obtain success without following this principle. Therefore, the best course is to work from the very beginning in Krishna consciousness under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the way to make everything successful. The mode of goodness is better than the modes of passion and ignorance. But one who takes directly to Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all three modes of material nature. Although there is a process of gradual elevation, if one, by the association of pure devotees, takes directly to Krishna consciousness, that is the best way. And that is recommended in this chapter. To achieve success in this way, one must first find the proper spiritual master and receive training under his direction. Then one can achieve faith in the Supreme. When that faith matures in the course of time, it's called love of God. This love is the ultimate goal of the living entities. One should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. That is the message of this 17th chapter. So there's many varieties of activities, and those activities done with faith and performed in the mode of goodness give one the ultimate result, and they bring one to the transcendental platform. So one should give up his nature or his faith in his particular mode of nature and develop faith in Shastra. And then if he does that, his faith, his sattva, will increase to goodness and then finally above the mode of goodness. And then he'll develop real faith in the Supreme and understand God directly. So Krishna, although he does give this indirect method in the Vedas, here in the Bhagavad Gita, he's recommending the direct path. of Krishna consciousness, which promotes one above the mode of goodness, and one is able to directly perceive the Supreme Lord Himself. So, are there any questions on this? Well, Om Ityetat Brahmano Nidishtam Nama means, thus Om is celebrated as a name of the Supreme. So the word Nama directly is used directly to indicate the Supreme. Although, as I said, all three are names of God. Om is glorified and famous throughout the Vedas as the name of the Supreme. And then Tattvamasi, I think you know what that means. Is the name of the Supreme, of the Brahman, the Absolute Truth. Tattvam asi, you are that. Though that, meaning that absolute truth. So the soul is also Brahman, part and parcel of the Supreme. And when he wants to transcend the modes of nature and become free from material entanglement, then he chants Tat in order to attain that realization of his constitutional position. And then Sad Eva Saumya means that those persons who are trying to aim for the Supreme and the activities which are performed to please the Supreme and the Supreme Himself are all Saumya. Now Saumya has many meanings. It means gentle or pleasing. Like this. Sober can mean sober also, different things. So all the activities, the devotees that are aiming for the Supreme, through those activities they're sat or saumya. They're pleasing. They're gentle. They are beautiful. That's the meaning. Yes. So it's because they're all different names. But they have different connotations. They're like different ways to approach the same thing. The first one is the name. The second one is chanted by those who want to become free from material entanglement. And the third is meaning eternity, religiousness, goodness, pleasing. The activities that are performed by those people are pleasing and beautiful. Amen. We have to take to Krishna consciousness. I mean, we're practicing being devotees, but we're not situated fully in Krishna consciousness. Krishna is above the modes. And the activities of reading Bhagavatam and Gita is above the modes. Worshipping the deity is above the modes. And chanting in kirtan and everything we're doing all of the activities are above the modes of nature. So by connecting with them, associating with them, we gradually become free from the modes of nature. But it doesn't happen overnight. It takes a long time. And it depends upon the intensity of absorption in which you perform the activities. Then again, because we are performing the activities of the soul, in other words, we're directly engaging in sakshat bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering Vishnu. So, therefore, since we are engaging in our eternal constitutional activities, we're considered to be liberated, as long as we continue to do so. So there's different ways to look at it. Of course, we know that, you know, we're still influenced by the modes of nature to a certain degree, according to our level. But in another sense, we're considered liberated because we're performing our eternal activities that are going to go on in the spiritual world. It's kind of, I guess it's like looking at it from both sides. If you're looking at it from the point of absolute time, then it's just a matter of time. We're already liberated. It's kind of like we're in the airplane that's going to Paris. So in one sense, we're already in Paris, although we're flying over the Atlantic from New York. You understand? So we're liberated, but we're not quite liberated yet. Kind of say that. It's a good example, I think, isn't it? As long as you stay on the airplane. Of course, you jump out of the airplane, then you're not going to go to Paris. So Prabhupada said, all the devotees who are pure devotees, like green mangoes on the tree. If they just stay on the tree, then they become ripe. Good question. Did everyone hear? He's asking that I mentioned that whether the activity is Bhagavad Dharma or Varnashram Dharma, it's still considered Sat. So he's wondering, what about ordinary Varnashram Dharma? Because we have at least three kinds of Varnashram Dharma. Asuric Varnashram Dharma, which means, you know, the people who claim to be brahmanas just because they have a thread, even though they're riding a rickshaw around and, you know, scooping up whatever from the street, and which is the caste system. And then the ordinary varnashram dharma is just the activities of varnashram and occupational duties without actually trying to please the Supreme. And we know that it's mentioned such persons fall down from their position to a hellish condition of life if they don't worship the Lord. Na bhajanti abhajananti stanat Vrashta Padantiyadha. So, and then we have Daivi Varnashram, means when the main thrust is hearing and chanting, and then we're doing Varnashram, we're following the rules of Varnashram simply to support us in our attempts to please the Supreme and attain pure bhakti. So, you're asking about the middle of just the ordinary Varnashram activities, how are they sat? Well, it's mentioned that Varnashrama Charavata Vishnu Purushena Parapuma Vishnu Aravite Panta Nanyata Toshikarnam, that Varnashram duties are meant for pleasing the Supreme. And that's basically how they're approached. But because people are materialistic, they may perform rules and regulations without having any such intention. Just like devotees, sometimes in our movement, they also may be going through the motions of Krishna consciousness, but they have other motives. And then after some time, they usually leave. But still, even though that may be true, the fact that they're chanting the name of God, taking prasadam, they see the deities and hear some Bhagavatam, that's to their eternal benefit. So similarly in Varnashram, even if people are not focused on attaining the Supreme, there's some beneficial results to performing their Varnashram duties, in that their minds and senses become more satisfied and peaceful. That's beneficial for helping them to understand God. And in the Varnashram Dharma, there's regard for the Vedas, there's respect for Brahmins and cows, and there are activities which are, some of which are actually devotional. Like caring for a cow is part of Varnashram, but it's also considered a direct anga of bhakti, if you remember in your nectar devotion, circumambulating a cow and, like this, scratching his neck and feeding him. So three ways to serve the cows. These activities are directly pleasing to the Supreme. So there's some, benefit there. And therefore they're called sat. But usually, we know that verse is there, so usually if a person doesn't want to please the Supreme, then that means he has a somewhat offensive mentality. And if he has an offensive mentality, then it means he'll, make offenses to the Brahmins or the cows or the Lord in the temple or like this. He'll become envious and then he'll fall down. And if someone's just into rules and regulations without understanding the ultimate goal, it means he's trying to avoid God and he's just self-centered, and that means he'll fall down. In other words, you can do anything in a material way. You could be a pujari in a temple, and you could make offenses, and you could have ill motives. Just, we said that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that many pujaris here in Vrindavan, they use the deity, just like someone takes Shalagram Shila to crack nuts with. So, it can get that bad. Does that answer your question? Even goes as far as saying they're abominable. Right. That's like in chapter 12 we read, remember, verse 11? Work in this consciousness of me and try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. And here Prabhupada describes how one can perform different kinds of philanthropic or altruistic activities which are beneficial, giving up the fruits of one's results, it purifies his mind gradually, and then one can come to Krishna consciousness. He says that, so social service, community service, and this, etc., may be accepted, so that someday one may come to the stage of pure devotional service. So there it's mentioned how these activities can be beneficial and they may be accepted. But then you have the statement here in the last commentary that anything done without the transcendental objective, whether it be sacrifice, charity, or penance, is useless. Therefore, in this verse, it is said that these activities are abominable. So you have a difference, right? It seems to be a contradiction, doesn't it? Does everyone follow what I'm saying? Huh? Yes, no, or maybe. Let's just try to understand what I'm saying first. Because it doesn't seem like you understand there seems to be a contradiction. In text 11 of chapter 12, it's saying that these activities can be accepted and they're good, they're beneficial, although they're not the highest good. It's not as good as directly serving Krishna, but it may help you. And then in this verse, it says that these things are all useless. Huh? Yogi, you're okay? These are all abominable. So that's a contradiction. One place it says they're good, and the other place says they're not only bad, but they're abominable. Now, so all of these activities, sacrifice, charity, penance, they can be performed with a very materialistic mentality. Very materialistic. And charity can also be given in the mode of ignorance, which really gives you, Prabhupada says it paves the way for going to hell. Right? You heard that on the lecture yesterday. So when these activities perform in a materialistic way, without faith in the Supreme, then they're abominable. Because they're taking the place. When you use them as a substitute for coming to God, when you're using them, then it becomes like an obstruction. When you're using it as an excuse for worshiping God, you're doing some kind of puja or charity or something, but actually have nothing to do with God, and you're using that as like an excuse or as a something to substitute worshiping the Supreme or attaining the Supreme, then it's blocking your path to the Supreme. Then it becomes an obstruction. But in chapter 12, these things are being described. First of all, the context is different because chapter 12 is this chapter of Bhakti Yoga, right? That's a big difference. First of all, you have to understand the context. Krishna is describing bhakti, and from those who purely love God, to those who are practicing loving God, to those who are working for God, right? And then those who are giving up for God, sacrificing their fruits, the results. So they're all doing it for God. The first one knows it's Krishna. The first two know it's Krishna, and that's actually the third one also. The fourth one, he says that even if the person doesn't know it's Krishna, but he still knows it's God. Right? He's still doing it for God, for the absolute truth. So this is what 17 is saying, that there has to be this faith in the absolute truth, that he may not know it's Krishna, but he's doing a sacrifice to please God. He may think it's Vishnu, he may think it's, I don't know what, he can think so many things. But he should have the faith in the Supreme, and that's the thing which gives the sacrifice the ultimate benefit. Because then gradually he will get more and more knowledge. But if he has no faith in the Supreme, he has no faith in God, he's just doing some rituals, varnashram duties, or, you know, Hindu rituals, then it's all useless. It's like not doing it at all. So this is the difference. The person has to have faith in at least in God. And in chapter 13, or in chapter 11, it's describing a person who has that faith in the Supreme. He may not know it's Krishna, but he still has, I'm doing the sacrifice and giving up my fruits for God, like this, and then he gets the benefit. The verses that I've read, bhajantiya na bhajantiya abhajananti prashta patantiya da Tato brashta patantida. So the person who does it without faith in the Supreme, then he falls down. And we can see that people, if they're worshipping, just like there's another verse from the Narada Pancharatra, yastu narayanam devam brahma rudradi daivita samatve nama vikshita sahushandi bhavendravam. Those who are worshipping the Supreme, those who are worshipping Brahma, Shiva, and other demigods on the same level as Narayana, or they think Narayana as a demigod, then they're considered atheists and they're great offenders. So if you don't have the right conception, if you don't have faith in God as, being superior also to the other demigods and so forth, then they can commit offenses to God. They fall down. And the other verse says those who are officially in Varnashram, but they don't worship God, they fall down. So it's not that it's just all good just because it's Hindu or Vedic. It can be also bad if they have the wrong conception. They can be offensive, or they can just be stuck in worshipping Kali and so forth. We know that they don't get ultimate benefit from performing such puja.
At this stage,
when they get straightened out, then they can come to a higher... there are examples where people who are doing such thing were in ignorance, and then they stumbled into a Vishnu temple, and just because they were Hindu, they bowed down and so forth. Then they have direct contact with Krishna conscious activity. But in general, we're just speaking about philosophy, not kind of exceptions to the rules. Okay, we'll stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki.